The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strongwriter on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. That's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
Yeah. My mind's made up to wrap things up and to dance the last dance. How you doing, everybody? My name is Dean Olson, and I am the Strong Writer on the radio. It is my goal on this show to keep songwriters and artists musically fit, and the way I love to do it is through faith and encouragement, by learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you. And today I bring you the third and final installment of my conversation with the wonderful father and daughter songwriting team, Bill Purcell, and his wonderful and charming, talented, jazz-singing daughter, Laura Purcell. And the album that the two of them worked on is called The Very Last Dance Hall Left in L.A., and is available on iTunes, CD Baby, other places, but the best place to go would be laurapurcell.com. Purcell spelled P-U-R-S-E-L-L.com. And now, the exciting conclusion. And I left off talking to Bill Purcell and the music biz and how it's changed over the last, say, 50 years. So here we go. Perspective.
And so consequently today, It's a whole different ballgame. You do it on the net. And that's it. I'm pulling a blank on that. I really don't know.
No, but that's good. You're bridging the gap between what you had to experience from the record. What's that like when something hits a Billboard? Is there a big celebration? Or I don't.
Well,
I can tell you
that there was a meeting that we had just before Christmas in 1962, and Bill and I were there. Bill Justice and I with Frank Jones. And Bill made a comment. He said, I know this record could be a hit.
Yeah.
And Frank said, well, we're into the Christmas marketing right now, but when January comes, I think possibly it might start going up on the charts. Well, by golly, in January, I was coming home late at night after a session, and I had the car radio on, and I was picking up an Alabama station because everything else had gone off. And I heard my record very faintly, and I heard my name even more faintly on the thing. And I thought, well, I've got a regional hit. It's happening, you know?
Yeah.
So I went into the house and subscribed to Billboard magazine and watched the thing go up, you know?
It doesn't work that way.
You can pretty well tell what the market's going to do by these regional breakouts. And of course, it came into the bubbling 100 and then went all the way up to number 7 or 5, I think, in the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, now people are giving their music away for free.
I know.
On YouTube. They just want people to hear it.
That's part of the reason I have this show. I love to find out from people. Some people are just doing it for the fun of it, and a lot of stuff is given away for free, and I just go, well, maybe you don't want to be a millionaire from this stuff, but you sure want to get paid for what you did.
Amen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly right. And in those days, like Johnny Cash, this is very interesting. I think that Sal Hollick, who was his agent at the time, took good care of Johnny. Finally, Sony let him go. And I don't think I'm telling anything out of school here because John is gone and so is a lot of the people that were involved. But
let him come after you. Throw caution to the wind.
Well, the idea was that Sal had taken all the royalties and put them into Columbia stock.
Oh.
So that when Johnny was let go, I mean, who cares, you know?
Yeah.
He had so much money in the stock. But, you know, managers then, I don't know, maybe they're different today, but they took care of you. I think he made basically most of his money on the road.
Are you talking about Johnny Cash?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, were you aware and at least about what happened to him 30 years ago when Columbia just basically fired him out of the blue and said that you're no...
They say they fired him and dropped him, and everyone said, poor John. But, I mean, I was sitting over here laughing about it because I knew he had a lot of Columbia stock.
Oh, okay. So was he a smart guy in that regard?
I think Johnny had what they call a tremendous amount of basic workable intelligence. He knew what he was doing. He may have been from a sharecropper's background or whatever you want to call it, but he had a tremendous sense of what was going to happen when he did these things. And, of course, that voice of his was his whole career. I mean, it sounded like the sound of a man who went out and chopped several cords of wood and came in for dinner, you know?
Yeah.
It has that kind of sound to it.
Yeah, nobody sounded like him.
I heard
this. He's very, very unique.
I heard this story. Dick Dale, the surf guitar man, he'd said something about Johnny Cash. And I always wondered if there was a lot of truth to it, but, you know, he was able to market himself on his own pretty well, that once he pressed records on his own, he would just sell them out of his trunk after he did a show or something like that. And I heard that.
Yeah.
I thought was really good.
That San Quentin album that he put out was his idea entirely.
Really?
Oh, no, it's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That was very savvy.
It was
a savvy move.
It's those kind of things. I get lessons from that kind of thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he was a nice guy. I mean, he really was. I'll tell you a funny story about Kris Kristofferson.
All right.
He was sending him, you know, when Kris came to town here, he was working down at Columbia B Studios and, you know, working the stereo board and emptying ashtrays. And I came home and told my wife, I said, there is this guy, you're not going to believe this, who is a Rhodes Scholar.
All right.
Who flies choppers down south, but he's in the Columbia B Studio here to learn how to write music and, songs and so forth. And my wife, who was a fine writer for the Tennessean, said, well, he must be crazy. Well, the next thing you know, Janis Joplin has this Me and Bobby McGee thing out.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's gone. And Kris starts going out and doing these little, roadhouses and things and so forth and so on. That was the beginning.
Incredible.
I've seen that happen here.
Yeah.
You know, where somebody will come in here, especially in those days, when there weren't really too many impediments in the way. You could sort of go, and you could go into a publisher without having to go past the secretary. You could go in and sit down and play something right there, you know?
Excellent.
There was so much more open in those days.
Yeah. Come on, have you heard the story? I'm sure this is true, and I don't know, maybe you've already heard the story, that Kris Kristofferson wanted Johnny Cash to record Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Right.
And he could not get through to Johnny. So he flew his helicopter
into
the backyard of Johnny's house and landed on his property by the river, by the lake.
Wow.
And got out of the darn helicopter, and Johnny's coming out saying, well, what's going on here? And Kris walks over and says, now, here, listen to this thing.
And he did, and he recorded it. Oh, it's a great song.
Yeah.
That was wild, wasn't it? I think that was marvelous, the way he did that.
That took some amazing hits off.
Yeah,
it really did.
It sure did.
I don't know.
You know, another time, we were doing Little Jimmy Dickens one time, and and he's big on the Opry and all that sort of thing. And we were doing one tune, and suddenly, very typically, somebody walked in or rushed in with some material and took him out of the room into the studio C, taught him the tune, brought it back in, and we'd learned the chords and we recorded it. I came home and told my wife, well, we've recorded the title of the worst piece of trash I've ever heard. It's called May the Bird of Paradise Fly Up Your Nose. And 2 weeks later, it was on the Donnie Carson show, you know?
That was almost a staple of his show when he would do one of his characters, you know?
It became his big record. You know?
That's hilarious. That's a story I'd never heard before.
Oh, that's great. And Bill, and may I say thank you for all these stories, Bill. I appreciate that. You know, I hope Laura doesn't mind that we're almost ignoring her now, just letting her chime in every once in a while.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
This is her. This is her time to shine, and we're, and I'm talking to Dad. But I cannot get enough of stories and experience from somebody who's been around the block, so to speak. You know.
Yeah, well, you need to hear them. You need to hear as many as you can.
Well,
yeah.
You know, nothing, I'm sorry about that, too, because nothing bores me more than hearing you say, well, I was there and I did this.
Well, yeah.
But in truth, when you get an interview like this, these things happen where it might fire you up and you might think of something to say or whatever it is.
Of course, yeah.
At any rate, these are true things that happen. And I think I have no idea what goes on, basically, that they've been teaching so long, but there were so many things that happened on the spur of the moment that seemed to have some effect on what was going to be produced out of those studios, you know.
Sure.
I noticed that at the time, looking back on it, that, I don't know, things were more accessible, I think, you know.
What do you think of all the things that your daughter's had done like 20 years ago, you know, acting, and she got to even figure skate in a video, and I thought that was cool. I remember that one.
And nobody knows this, but when we went to, Laura speaks fluent Russian. I don't know.
I don't, Dad, it's not fluent.
It's enough to be an interpreter.
That's good enough.
And that happened because George White, we all went to Russia at one point several years ago. As part of the Eugene O'Neill Theater group, you know. And we did a jazz concert over in St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
Laura learned the Cyrillic alphabet in something like 1 week. Whoa. On the way over there.
Well, yeah, we had to be able to read the signs. There was no way. Nobody spoke English. And the musicians definitely did not speak English, not the jazz musicians. So I actually went back to Russia 6 months later, and by that time I had taken a class. Conversational Russian, really intense, and I was able to actually have conversations with people, and I became such a fan of the Russian culture that I ended up studying for, I guess it was 4 years. So I took 4 years of Russian after that, and I still remember a lot of it. I want to go back, but I sang some songs in Russian. I sang some Russian folk tunes.
That's amazing.
And Dad, you and I did that in Nashville at Sequel.
Yeah.
We had a Russian theme night. We've had a lot of really amazing adventures together musically. It's been incredible. It's really been incredible. Too many to even talk about.
That's okay. I'm glad we're cramming enough.
You know
we can.
That, you know that in St. Petersburg there's a Louis Armstrong Hall.
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's right.
And with his picture on the front of it in St. Petersburg, and these Russian musicians are very hip. They know all of these tunes.
Right. Right.
So. You may not be able to speak Russian, but all you have to do is play the chord progressions, and they're there, you know?
Oh, they love jazz. They love jazz.
Do they?
And, you know, jazz, it's the American art form. Nobody else does it.
Mm-hmm.
That belongs to us.
That's right.
And
that's
when
right.
You go to Europe, they really appreciate it, and they want to learn how to play it. And it's interesting because in Russia, a lot of the musicians, they didn't really know how to swing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's almost something... Having the ability to swing is very American,
yeah.
And they could do a shuffle, but they couldn't really swing, you know. And I could think, well, maybe the more they do this, they'll get a little hipper and get the feel for it. But it's interesting because it's not part of their culture.
Yeah,
the whole it's metaphorical, but it's very real. They just don't swing.
Were you?
And I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying that.
No.
Another aeroplane, another sunny place. I'm lucky, I know, but I wanna go home. I've got to go home. Let me go home. I'm just too far from where you are. I wanna come home.
Almost 15 years ago, your daughter got to sing for the former president and first lady in Palm Springs. That's what it said in her bio there. Were you there when that happened?
Yeah, I did. I got a call for President Ford and his wife. They were doing a fashion show benefit in Palm Springs. And her favorite song was from the movie A Chorus Line, What I Did for Love.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody knew that I knew it, and they called me a week before and said, can you drive out to Palm Springs and sing with us, sing that song for the former First Lady? And I, of course. And so I went out, and it was a big event, and had the big screens up, and I got to meet her and the president. It was a real honor to be able to do that.
What a blessing.
Amazing. And he was very old at that point anyway.
So yeah, that's true.
It was a great experience.
Yeah, it wasn't long before he would pass away, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a blessing that you two get to work together at this stage. It's just, and the way you two get along, it's you just don't want the party to end, do you?
Yeah, right. we have a lot of fun.
I'm proud of her.
We've had our differences in the studio. There were lots of conversations about levels of strings versus the vocals, the piano, but we got that all ironed out.
Tell me that when your dad's not on the air with me, and I'll be
exactly
happy.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was just curious about you have West Coast vocals, right? What's the difference between West Coast and East Coast jazz? I've never been able to put my finger on that.
Well, I think West Coast jazz is more along the line of Chet Baker. When I think of West Coast, I think of Chet Baker.
Uh-huh.
Very, very minimalistic.
It's very... I think it's more experimental. It's... And going back in years, the East Coast jazz was very blues oriented.
Yeah.
If you work with Joe Benjamin or any of those people, they came up from a very definite blues background. Whereas if you go out to California, there wasn't as much of that. They were playing kind of a, I won't say whiter type of music, but
yeah,
it was laced with other kinds of influences that, it wasn't as much as we used to call down music, you know, when it's really blues.
Yeah.
And a lot of creativity came out of California that way. And that, it did become a school of jazz playing with Chet Baker. You're absolutely right.
Chet Baker's a good example, yeah.
With jazz vocals, I mean, just speaking from personal experience.
Dave Brubeck came out of that. You
right.
Know?
Well, I've been so lucky to be able to meet and work with a lot of the players who worked with Frank Sinatra, like Ron Anthony on guitar, and, you know, Barry's wife, who recorded with Sammy Davis Jr. and went on the road with him.
Beautiful.
I've been so lucky, and these guys have really taught me vocally that less is more. You don't want to get all fancy with all the runs and going northeast, south, and west, but you just sing the melody and let the musicians support you. That's how to put a song across.
Beautiful.
Because every song is a story. And let the words tell the story, and don't try to get fancy. Just less is more. And that's something that's very, very West Coast to me. And I got it right from the mouth of the guy who played with Frank, who was one of the best interpreters of music ever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so lucky that was imparted to me, and that's something that I've really, really tried to follow all these years. I've been so lucky.
Well, you mentioned Anita O'Day as an influence, and Anita O'Day was
one
of those people. I fell in love with that voice mainly because I heard her singing on a live album from, I think she recorded up at Monterey back in the 50s or something.
Yeah,
and that was my interpretation. I don't even know if she qualifies as a West Coast influence, but she certainly got my attention back then.
Oh, she was the hip. She was so hip.
She was.
Yeah. And, you know, she sang up until the end of her life.
Yeah.
Not quite well, from what I understand. But, you know, she never stopped.
I think that was supposed to, if I remember right, she had a surgical accident years and years prior to that. And that's how she got that voice, where she was able to hold certain notes and that other people couldn't.
Well, and she had no vibrato.
Yeah, exactly. No vibrato in her voice.
Yeah. She physically had no vibrato. Yeah. So she had to compensate in other ways. I mean, she was such a creative genius, I think, you know. What a wild woman. And she never apologized for her life.
No,
she
didn't.
Never apologized for anything that she did. She owned it. She was just a true renegade. They have a great documentary out about her life that you should see. And I have
seen it, yeah. Once I saw it and I learned some of the other stuff about her, I said, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Why didn't more people know about her like they knew about some of the other singers? You know?
Yeah, well, she went to Europe. She was in Europe for years performing. So, yeah, she never got the recognition that some of the other, like Rosemary Clooney and some of the other girl singers did. And she didn't do movie soundtracks. You know, she was really, she followed the beat of her own drum. She was amazing.
we'll catch up. Some other time. Some other time.
Let me tell you both something. I was so scared that I was going to talk to you and not really have anything to say because... Just because but you know what? You are fantastic people, and you can tell that you're genuine, and you get along, and you have a great time working together, and it's just the what could be more perfect than that? So
I hope
you enjoy the ride as you have it. You know.
Yeah, exactly. We do. Grateful for every day. Project, every adventure.
Bill, I appreciate that. I wish I could have asked for more stories, and you say it's kind of boring about that, but I eat it up. I really enjoy that, and what you said earlier is true, that you can gain some kind of inspiration from maybe just one little nugget that you happen to share, and I appreciate it, okay?
Well, I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
I hope you got something you can use.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one last story, and I think this is probably, you know, I told Laura at the very beginning when we were doing recording, I said, now listen, you're the boss.
Oh, boy, he's
going to
go there. Oh,
nice. You know, do it.
You're the boss. You know, I'm the accompanist, and whatever you want me to do, you tell me, okay? Well, she ran off with that. When I was with, we were doing this one gig down in Savannah, I believe it was.
Yeah.
At Brother Ray's place.
Yeah.
And I had a band there, and I was, you know, running behind her and so on and so on. And I got to the end of the tune, and I couldn't think of anything to put, so I put a cha-cha-cha ending on it, you know, cha-cha-cha. And she turned around and looked at me and said, in front of everybody, Dad, that was one of the worst possible endings you ever put on my tune. And I sat there and dug my toe into the rug, you know.
Or you were waiting for the shoe to drop? Something she was going to retaliate?
She was the boss. She's the boss.
I hate the cha-cha-cha ending. Cha-cha-cha ending. That's when you can't think of anything else.
What do you think? That's you think that's corny? Or?
Oh, it's so cornball.
It,
it cuts you off. It's like there's no place to go after cha-cha-cha. It's like, oh, we're done.
Like, why did you have to do that? You just ruined a good thing.
We're not going to slow jam it out. We're not going to, like, keep them. We're not going to fade. We're not going to do anything cool. We're going to just do a cha-cha-cha.
Well, she was the boss. She told me what she thought.
Well, I still stand behind that. I can't stand the cha-cha-cha. I'm sorry. I hate it. And that's also very West Coast, by the way.
That's a West Coast thing?
Yes. I don't think you're going to hear a lot of cha-cha-cha.
What do you do these days besides teaching, Bill? Do you perform for audiences or in any other setting than that?
You know, I think I do most of my playing in California with Laura, you know, because back here I'm so busy teaching, and except for recording, you know, when we get in there and do some stuff. But
we recorded 5 CDs together. We've done... You've been involved in every one of my CDs.
Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't realize that you were involved with all of those.
Oh, yeah, in some capacity.
Including the one, the Christmas one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Dad did. Didn't you do 2 or 3 of the arrangements and he played piano on
that's
half
right.
of them?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yep, I did.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. So much to... I hope... Hope when your voice gets better, Laura, that you'll maybe I can visit with you again and or come see you out in L.A. sometime, you know?
That would be fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, too, Bill. I sure appreciate that. Hope I might cross paths with you again because you sound like a great guy. And so chipper for your age. No insult. No insult intended. No backhanded compliments.
Yeah.
I just think that's great. The two of you have an album. You're actually billing yourself together as Bill Purcell and Laura Purcell.
That's right.
Purcell is spelled P-U-R-S-E-L-L, and you can search for that. You can search for that on iTunes and get that and all that good stuff. I'll make sure that everybody knows that. I build a page on my website so everybody can come and see you, and then it'll direct to your website, you know?
And if people want to come hear me live, I don't know if you want to include this, but every Thursday night I sing with an incredible jazz trio at the Farmer's Market in the Grove in Los Angeles.
Really?
At a place called, yeah, it's a place called Mixology 101.
Okay.
It's a very cool gig, and I'm there every Thursday from 7 to 10.
Wonderful. I'm going to write that down. I think I've heard of Mixology 101. Yeah.
Yeah, it's right, and it's upstairs. It overlooks the walkway. It's very hip, very cool. They open up the windows, and we sing over the courtyard. And I'm with Ron Eske, who's a very famous seven-string jazz guitar player from New Orleans, from Louisiana.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's an incredible night of jazz.
Well, that's great.
I want to let people know about that.
Let me sort of keep in touch. I'll let you know the progress. May I connect with you on Facebook, Laura? And I'll.
Oh, please. I want you to.
Okay.
Yes.
That's great. Anything you can direct the audience besides going to iTunes, where else can they go?
You have a website.
Yeah.
LauraPurcell.com, P-U-R-S-E-L-L. It's brand new, revamped. Those are all recent photographs, and that is me as I look now.
Okay.
and you can hit all of the links, and they will take you to all the CDs that I have where you can purchase them.
Nice photo shoot for the cover of the album, too, that with that getup you're wearing.
Oh, the Art Deco. That was a lot of fun during Skyline.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't walk around the street looking like that, but yeah, that was a lot of fun.
What if we want to learn more about your dad, except for Wikipedia? Can we go to your site and go to him, or what?
Well, yeah.
How do you find out about what he's done?
Well, several places. And you could probably, let's see, you could go into Belmont University and the faculty,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see my background, and there's... Actually,
yeah,
a little thing to blip on, you can hear me playing the piano sonata that I wrote back in 1985.
Oh.
Which, that's the other side of my existence, but...
That's great.
Yeah, and you know what, Dad? We need to build you a website. You really need your own website. You really do.
Okay, could be.
I think we're gonna do that.
I like how Dad says, he says, okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna hook him up. In fact, the guy who did mine, I'm going to have him do Dad's. I think that would be great.
You're the boss, Laura. Don't worry.
Yeah, he should have his own website.
Oh, I'm so happy. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to take a bow and gracefully exit this, so I want to tell you how much I appreciate it. It was such a pleasure to talk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure to talk to you both. And Laura, we'll be in touch again, okay? Maybe we can have you both back if he's so inclined.
Yeah,
you know?
And tell your songwriters any you wanted some piece of advice.
Yes, please. Would you do that? Yeah.
I would. Don't ever throw away your notes. Keep your notes. Because the lyrics for The Last Dance All Left in L.A. were 15 years old, and I had almost put them in my track, and they became the title track. So anytime you write something, save it. If you think there's a shred of something there, just keep it.
Good
and
advice.
Go back, look at it again. Look at it again 10 years from now, because there might be gold there. You never know.
Thank you, Laura. I really appreciate it. And Bill, in all your time teaching, have you ever had any students that you might have been able to tell something that, have you ever seen them struggle or even wonder if this is what they want to do? Maybe they want to get out of the biz, and yet you had something to say to them?
Well, I certainly, I tell you, one student that I had who got his PhD, I remember one time he was sitting in the classroom looking rather pained, and I asked him later, you know, what was the problem? And it turned out that he hadn't eaten for about 2 days.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, we solved that problem immediately. But students, you know, they have to pay so much money today to go to college to get this education.
I know.
And so many of them end up owing the government $26,000, $40,000, $50,000 that they they have to work out later on in their lives. And I feel for them on that. Both the parents are involved and they're involved in having to put out all this money today.
Yeah, we understand.
To go and get an education. And I give them, my hats off to them for doing that. And it also gives you an increased feeling of responsibility for teaching the course right, because you want to make sure they get their money's worth, you know?
Right, right.
It's a little different today than it used to be.
Yeah, I never had all the student loans hanging over my head. I was so lucky not to have to go through that. That's got to be so difficult.
Yeah, it's got to
really
haunt
gotta
them.
You really got to want it pretty badly.
It haunts you for a long, long time after the fact.
Yeah.
It is. And then, too, when they get the degree, they're out there, and lots of them take you know, whatever they can get to make a living today, because it's so hard to get into teaching when you have just a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. And that's great. On that happy note, no. This is the side. Sometimes people will sugarcoat that stuff, and I'd rather hear it from, you know, because it's not,
yeah,
it's not all pretty out there, but you really have to believe in yourself, right? If you know that's what you're supposed to do, you shouldn't give up on it. But I never know what to say to people.
You got to be able to pay your bills and live,
right,
too, at the same time.
You know, I'll tell you, it's an interesting thing. Once you've been into that field of education, you begin to really feel that that it's a privilege almost that you're allowed to go and get that kind of schooling, compared to how hard it is for most people in this country right now to make a living, that you have the chance to go to school, you know.
Yeah.
And I know that when I first came to town and got into this business, I already had 2 degrees and almost my third one. And it suddenly came home to me many, many, many years later while I was teaching at Belmont. Why in the world shouldn't I go ahead and finish that doctoral degree? Mm-hmm. And I just happened to run into a fellow that was running Eastman at the time, Bob Freeman, out in California. I belong to a club out there called the Bohemian Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, and he was there as a guest, and he said, well, why don't you come back and finish your doctoral degree? And I said, good grief, Bob, the statute's out on me on that one. And he said, well, do you have your hours? And I said, I think I do. Well, make a long story short, I finished my doctoral degree one click away from the age of 70.
Hmm, that's good.
Yep.
You got it done.
I wanted to do it. Because when Dad was alive, he said to me when I started teaching at Belmont, he said, well, now at least you're going to start using your degrees.
Well, that's
because I've been in the record business, and I don't know if he thought that was legitimate or not. But he was an educator, and he felt like, well, what are you doing? You got all these degrees. Why aren't you? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's great. You achieved a personal goal. The 70s, that's really, really good to hear.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Okay, now you're talking. Now, let's end on that. I appreciate it.
Well, you can leave the story out about getting the doctoral degree at 70. I mean, that's not
a word. Yeah, I think it's inspiring. Let him design.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
I'll do the thinning around here. Don't. No.
Well, listen, thank you so much.
Sir, it was a pleasure, both you and your daughter, and looking forward to... to hearing this CD, to hear these songs in full. They are really put together well, and
you deserve.
By the way,
yes.
When you listen to especially the one I did on I'll Be Seeing You.
Okay,
that's my favorite. One of my favorites on the album.
I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night. I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
How did you end up... figuring out how to arrange that, you know, that's been done a lot, right? Sammy Fain or whatever his name is.
The song itself was a goodbye song that Liberace used to use all the time, you know, I'll be seeing you and all the old familiar places, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you're off the stage. And when Laura and I got a hold of this thing, I thought, why not do we do this as a reflective type of thing rather than just I'll be seeing you and flip it off that way, because somehow you could put all the regrets and all the emotions and everything into that one particular song. That's the way I did the arrangement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you could feel it.
And you've got a gorgeous, gorgeous string intro, an elongated string intro in the front of the piece. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, you had top-notch musicians from Nashville.
It's a real treat.
Well, you sing the heck out of it.
It's a great track.
That's wonderful. Right, okay. Well, I'll
we'll let this man go, Dad.
Yeah, no, that, yeah. You mean let him go, let Bill go?
Let you go. We've taken up your time.
No, that's wonderful. No, I thank you for spending all the time you did. It was really, really a lot of fun.
Well, thank
you
for doing
it. I'm so glad.
Okay.
It was wonderful.
Have a great day, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Laura. Take care of yourselves.
Bye.
All right. There you go. See, that's why I do a show like this, is so I can meet wonderful and talented people just like these two. You've now learned a lot about Laura Purcell and her dad, Bill Purcell, but I highly recommend that you go to www.laurapurcell.com and go check out the rest of her albums. She has some wonderful music. Her dad's hand has touched a lot of it, and you've heard Laura's singing voice. Her vocals are sweet and smooth, and you're going to like this latest album called The Very Last Dance Hall Left in L.A. It's at iTunes, CD Baby, and by going to that website. So, thank you so much, Laura and Bill Purcell. I have to get going. Until next time, this is Dean Olson, the Strong Rider on the radio, saying to you, let's all put our best pens forward and be strong riders together. Go forth, have a wonderful weekend. God bless, take care, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye now.
You've been listening to Strong Rider on the radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the Amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.